that level of detail at the moment. My guess is he was referring to either the limiting camping parties to number of available sites or limit numbers of boaters, one of those two items. And he was probably combining the support, the strongly support and support categories. That would be my guess.
Another question.
Yes, Representative Sowa.
When did you do your studies of the river?
This study's been done in roughly the year preceding January 30th, 1987. So we sent out surveys last summer, basically.
Go ahead.
What section of the river did you observe for overuse other than through the questionnaire?
Okay, that the results that I was giving you in terms of impacts and standards were from some other questions, again, which I'd be glad to specify for you if you like. And the report discusses the results section by section. And in the interest of putting this all into a five minute presentation, I kind of lumped that all together for you again. I'd be glad to make a presentation, or if you like to take the time now to give you as much detail as you like about one section or the next.
Well, I don't know if you know or not, but we had a float trip down the river this last weekend, and we saw that the areas that were supposedly overused had completely, I don't know what completely is, but completely regenerated, and I was wondering if you had included in your study some personal or some observations of the area in this regenerated parts of the year during the early spring, if you included any of that data in the report.
Okay. Because of the timeline that we were faced with, we didn't get as much of a full cycle as we would like. We had to have that report submitted to state parks by the end of January. That was our agreement in terms of our contract. We did do some observation at early in the spring of 1986. Okay, so we as best we could, we tried to get some information about that. In terms of the other kind of impacts, that, you know, the social impacts from sheer numbers of people, obviously your trip that occurred in the second week in April wouldn't have been at a time when you would have observed any of those impacts. I wouldn't expect that, and the data would show that.
Sure.
You wouldn't expect that.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
You bet.
If we have a working group on this, they may want to get back to you.
Okay, I'd be glad to help anyway.
Thank you very much. I want to take a couple more people on this bill, then we will take a short break about 3:30, and then I'm going to come back and we will hear a few of the witnesses on 2906, who I think have to leave. Is that right? It's 2906, is it not? Let me ask the other people that have signed up, John Merritt, Sam Pace, Thomas Troutman, Christine Jackson, and Lonnie Zimmerman. I think some of you, I might ask as you come up, if we've had testimony that's already been given that duplicate yours, if you would economize as much as possible, we would appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You want us all up here at the same
time? Why don't some of you come up together and we'll take you separately, but...
These are both in order from left to center, your left to right.
All right, fine. Let's pass them down and you can take your own. Thank you very much. Okay, good. We'll see that they get. Thank you very much. Welcome. Why don't we start on the left and we'll go across. My left.
My name is Sam Pace. I'm the proprietor of Pace's Northwest River Tours, a whitewater company emphasizing Deschutes and McKenzie River raft and fishing trips. I'm from Eugene. I've provided the committee with written testimony. Rather than reading or even summarizing that testimony, I would like to simply request that that be made a part of the record and respond directly to some of the testimony that I've heard here today, and try to offer a slightly different perspective on some of this than what you have heard. And there are a number of issues that I'd like to respond to, so I'll just tick those off fairly quickly. Let me turn first to the issue of whether or not the Deschutes River policies ought to be determined here in the legislative committee and on the floor of the two chambers of this legislature. Mr. Representative Hostica says no. Mr. Noteboom of the tribe said it'd be inappropriate, and I submit to you that we will be here in perpetuity considering the Deschutes River if we decide that the legislature is the forum in which every decision regarding the Deschutes River is going to have to be made. Second, let me turn to the issue of BLM coordination.
Might I say you have a good understanding of how difficult it is to reach closure?
I will try to reach closure on my testimony fairly quickly. Let me turn to the issue of BLM coordination. Mr. Lilly's written testimony indicates that the BLM is, in fact, open to working in a cooperative effort. And I'm talking about the written testimony that he gave you and the letter that he has supplied to the committee. The history with the BLM has been good. They have been cooperative, and in fact, Ron Van Domelen, spoke with Mike Salee, who you heard earlier today, and he has indicated that the BLM is, in fact, willing to do that. And in fact, it was the BLM that took the lead in suggesting that users on the lower river get together and come up with a series of recommendations about some specific length of stay and campground issues, and make recommendations. And Mr. Van Domelen's instructions to us were we would be foolish to ignore it when all of the user groups agree on it. There is a motive for the BLM to cooperate. It represents additional funds for the resource that are not currently available. And I submit that even if the BLM were not willing to cooperate, that would not be a reason to not pass this bill. I would submit that the appropriate response would simply be narrowing language that says if the BLM agrees, the fee will be imposed by intergovernmental agreement and administrative rule, and if not, in the unlikely event that that happens, that it would be imposed on those areas other than those within the BLM's exclusive jurisdiction, and it would still give us the coverage of the entire river since the state manages the entire river. Mr. Lilly's testimony also makes reference to problems associated with coordinating with the tribe, and I'm talking about the written testimony that he presented here today. I submit to you that issue is a red herring. The tribe currently does not cooperate. It does not recognize the boater pass user fee as a basis for entry onto their land. In my estimation, that is is at best a neutral and does not represent a negative argument to be interposed in opposition to this rule. Let me turn now to the issue of the advisory committee. Pansy Nofziger, a member of the Scenic Waterways Advisory Committee, has told you of the problems that advisory committee has with the Deschutes River and the way that Deschutes River is managed by the state agencies, including the Scenic Waterways. Mr. Lilly's position before you today is that if we have an advisory committee, it ought to be only advisory, and second, it only ought to have input as to the advisory plan. He said, the real question is a question of access, and I submit to you that is not the question. The question is, what is the larger public interest for the management of the Deschutes River corridor? It does not simply involve a question of use. It involves questions about riparian zones, about fire protection, about facilities for non-boaters, about use, about wildlife preservation. I submit that there is a larger public interest that needs to be addressed, and 3019 is a way to get it there. In the written testimony that Mr. Lilly provided to you, and I'm talking about the letter, not the written testimony that you had a copy of today, he indicates that Scenic Waterways is the lead agency. But I submit to you that you've heard from a number of people, including Pansy Nofziger, who are in a position to know that there are problems with that. We've had studies in 82, 84, 86, and still no plan. Scenic Waterways comes into this hearing sitting on the fence. Basically, their mode of operation has been to respond to special interest or to private interest in a patchwork, reactive kind of mode that by its very nature tends to have a short timeline in terms of where we're going, and I submit that we need a long-term management plan. Let me turn now to Representative Parkinson's questions about the outfitting industry. Question about, he had a couple of questions there. First, whether or not, first in response to his question, Mr. Lilly suggested that the private boaters want the outfitters off the river. And I would invite the members of the committee to discuss that issue with Pansy Nofziger of the Northwest Rafters Association. I think you will find some variance between her response and Mr. Lilly's response. There is, admittedly, a small vocal minority who would prefer to have the outfitters off the river. Some of those have recently been convicted in federal court by the BLM in connection with their use practices as it relates to permitting on the river, and I don't believe those individuals are representative of the private boaters. But I think Representative Parkinson's concerns are very well placed, that a limited entry lottery would effectively put this segment of Oregon's tourism industry in the Central Oregon corridor out of business. And that is part of the reason that I think that Pansy Nofziger made a point of telling you that the local governments in that area are supportive of 3019. But I submit that there is another agenda that has not been discussed, that has not been openly discussed, and it ought to be just at least highlighted, in as much as there have been as many references as there have here to Senate Bill 495. That bill, sponsored at the request of the Warm Springs Tribe, would not apply to the tribe. It would not apply to the tribe. They could continue to put people on the river without regard to any such limited entry system. If they wanted to say, come to Kaneda and it's the only way you can float the river without going through the permit system, they could do it. They wanted to sell access, they could do it. In terms of the tourism and the guiding industry, it would allow them and only them to operate a guiding industry without having their clients have to go through a permit system. Now, you may hear some suggestions at some point, though I really believe it's more appropriate that this issue be addressed more fully in the context of hearings on 945, that somehow the tribe could agree that they would abide by it. The fact of the matter is that there is no agreement in that regard that would be binding. There would be no availability for damages. There would be no availability to enforce that. Because the tribe is, in fact, a sovereign nation, and they won't have any bones about telling you that they are a sovereign nation when it suits them to do so. I want to turn to Mr. Noteboom's comments about the need for managing social impacts. I suggest that there is another reason that would appear to be supported by the tribe's support of 945, and that is to promote the private economic interests of the tribe at the expense and exclusion of the public. Socialization is one of the major reasons that people go to the river, and that's reflected in the Shelby study. But more importantly, you've heard Pansy Nofziger tell you that we haven't done a good job of managing for environmental effects on the Deschutes River. There's more that we can do, and what we're suggesting is we ought to do that as a last resort and not as a first resort. With respect to the use limits, and he said that the outfitters support it, that a number of other people support it, I would direct your attention to page 278 of that study. In that general vicinity, there are about 20 to 25 management options that are available there, and those management options are not prioritized in the study. They were not asked in any kind of priority. And HB 3019 simply says, if we manage for limited use, we will manage for that as a last resort rather than a first resort. And until we have a study, and the Shelby study doesn't get us there, that supports a counter proposition, I suggest that 3019 makes good sense.
I don't believe that the Deschutes, that every major river in the state of Oregon ought to be managed for exactly the same recreational experience. The Shelby study does indicate that socialization is one of the reasons that people go to the river, and I would invite your examination of these pictures of the Rogue River taken in March of this year, which I submit tends to bear that thesis out. Finally, with respect to limiting the conclusions, which I think can appropriately be drawn from the Shelby study, there was no specific limitation proposal included in the methodology or the questions, that is, whether it be a lottery, first come, first serve, a seasonal, weekends, or whatever. And second, if you look at the questions in the general vicinity of pages 270 to 230, you'll see that the questions upon which they're drawing that information were heavily qualified. Finally, I would simply note that the study is incomplete. From what we are able to tell, not one of the clients of commercial outfitters who went down that river and who contributed to an industry that is valued in excess of $200 million in this state were interviewed in connection with that study.
Thank you very much. I could say, Mr. Pace, maybe we'd been better off if you'd given us your written testimony. but go ahead. Thank you for your testimony.
My name is Christine Jackson.
She's very articulate.
What do you do besides
Jackson? I'm a lawyer.
What?
I'm a lawyer besides in my defense, I will have to say I was a river guide long before I ever passed the bar, and after passing the bar, continued to guide rather than practice law for a considerable period of time.
And would you say the public's well served by that choice?
Or what? By my decision to enter law, I'm not sure.
All right. We appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Anyways, you're a hard act to follow. My name is Christine Jackson. I'm a member of the Northwest Rafters Association and an avid whitewater rafter. I have rafted on some of the best rivers in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and California. I hold a bachelor's degree in natural resources management from California Polytechnic State University and a master of science in forest resource economics from the University of Idaho. I paid for those two degrees mainly by working in the field in recreation management. I'm currently employed by the Pacific Northwest Research Station, U.S. Forest Service, and I need to stress that although my comments will reflect both my past experiences as a forester and as a recreationist, my testimony today in no way represents the views of my employer or my current research. I got to say that one. There's three topics I would like to look at today. I want to open by taking making a brief comment on the coalition of user groups supporting this bill and our trip on Saturday. Secondly, I'd like to address the ecology of the Deschutes River. And the last thing I'd like to look at briefly is the issue of river access and the impacts of heavy use. The first thing I need to say is something fantastic happened last Saturday. Thanks to Pansy Nofziger and a lot of other people and their hard work, we've got a new coalition of river users in Oregon. For the first time that I know of here, and possibly in the country, we have commercial outfitters, private boaters, canoeists, fishermen, and representatives from many other user groups of the Deschutes River working together. Last Saturday, we achieved our goal and enabled many of you and or your aides to actually experience the beauty of the Deschutes River. We've already heard this was the first time for many. We were blessed with sunny skies, a bright, newly green spring day, lots of wildlife to see, and an opportunity to share our love for that river. In my years as a resource professional, I've never heard of so many diverse groups joining together to work for a common cause. This innovative approach was effective and I think very satisfying to everyone who was involved. Secondly, I want to look at the ecology of the Deschutes River Canyon. This area receives, on the average, about 9 inches of rainfall a year. The major vegetative types outside the riparian zone are western juniper and sagebrush. Both of these habitat types are extremely drought tolerant and resistant to environmental damage. The understory of species associated with these types also exhibit these traits, and some specialized ecological adaptations. Thus, evolution and nature have designed an ecosystem that is durable, self-rejuvenating, and highly resistant to disturbances, whether they be from natural or human causes. It is these ecological adaptations that make this possible. The Deschutes River is a favorite for whitewater boating and fishing. Because this ecosystem is a drought and disturbance-tolerant one, current levels of use show no little sustained long-term damage. From an ecological viewpoint, the Deschutes River vegetation is ideal for heavy use from both land and water-based recreation. The Mullalla River, in contrast, has much more litter and soil erosion along its banks than the Deschutes does. My point here is that although the Deschutes is a high-use recreation area, the corresponding level of damage that one would expect does not occur beyond the seasonal basis. This is partly because the land, through these evolutionary processes, has developed techniques to withstand high levels of use. I'm not going to deny the need for localized site hardening. It does exist. But I do believe that further increases in visitor days may tip the ecological scales to the negative side on this one. The last topic I would like to look at is river access and the impact of these high use levels. After two centuries of heavy development and use, this area is not and never could be defined as a wilderness area. To lock the river up and limit access, as is proposed in Senate Bill 945, can only serve a few and would certainly block many, if not most, from enjoying the scenic resource of the Deschutes. This river is unique because it is a premier whitewater river. It is runnable year-round, if you can stand the cold, and it is within 2 hours of Oregon's major population center. Another factor that makes it unique is that no permit system exists right now. You can decide to run at any time. In my judgment, this should continue. I see little evidence that the ecology of the river basin is suffering from high use. There are other management strategies that you can use to regulate use levels besides imposing a permit system, as Senate Bill 945 suggests. These tools and methods can be used to preserve both the ecology and the unique access to recreation on the Deschutes as needed and without implementation of a permit system. However, there are localized areas and camps that would benefit from some site hardening and development. During the float trip last Saturday, I visited several camps and all the scouting points for the major rapids. These sites show signs that although fire rings, sleeping areas, beaches, and so on cause little damage, the trails to and from the river do need some help. That is a fragile area. That is where site hardening will be most useful. I've heard mentioned throughout this issue that the floaters have trashed the river out. Last Wednesday, some of the Deschutes outfitters made their annual garbage run from the Trout Creek put in to Maupin. This is the same run we made. In all, they collected only one 35-gallon garbage can full of garbage from private and public lands, but not from the Warm Springs Indian lands or the railroad lands. They're not allowed to trespass on these properties. In truth, Tom Robinson of Madras, one of the garbage collectors, said the trend has been towards less litter for the past several years. The pack-it-in, pack-it-out management strategy is working. I'd like to note here that there was a major flood this last winter and that basically the entire river channel has been scoured clean. If you would like to, some would suggest that swept all the garbage downstream, but on the other hand, when you look at the river, as we did last Saturday, the one side is picked up, they only got one garbage can, but the other side, the Warm Spring side, the Indian side, still are heavily littered. The river did not, if it did sweep, it was only on one side. I don't think rivers work that way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me say, first of all, I recognize that it's very warm in here. We have checked with the maintenance people, They cannot open the windows. They are working on the system. They have no idea when they will solve the problem, and as our clerk says, they should have to be here. But in any case, we'll do the best we can. Welcome.
I agree, so I'll cut it short. I'm John Merritt, the Secretary and Treasurer of Oregon Guides and Packers. I've submitted to you written testimony from the Board of Directors of Oregon Guides and Packers and a letter from myself as Secretary of Oregon Guides and Packers from the membership and a letter of testimony from myself as a retired Deschutes River outfitter. We are definitely in favor of House Bill 3019 and urge you to pass it out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Since the testimony is restricted to that bill today, I'll only refer to the other bill, 945, in that it manages the impact of present use rather than planning for the future by increasing the carrying capacity of the land, by improving campsites, and dedicating the entire array of management agencies to providing a positive river recreation and use experience to those who choose to go there. I'll sum it up by saying we are definitely in favor of 3019 and look forward to working with this committee in getting this bill passed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this point, we will take Mr. Hinshaw. Then Representative Eakins.
Well, as users of the river, where would you consider the money to come from if we were to form a statewide commission that would be involved in this river, regulating the river?
To whom is that addressed?
Whoever's most qualified.
Voter pass.
The fee system on the river?
That's how we currently pay for administration of what does happen over there right now. In addition, as it relates to the state, in addition, outfitters pay 3% of their gross 3% of their gross to the BLM in connection with their commercial operations, as well as the state use of fee for themselves and their clients.
One more.
Yes, Mr. Himself.
This is kind of a statement and a question. A longtime outdoor rider was with us on the trip, and he told me that the river and the banks were in the best shape that he'd seen them in 30 years. You think that was an exaggeration, or do you think that that's a true statement?
It's looking good.
Thank you.
Representative Eakins?
In all of these studies and all the work that's been done, has there been an establishment of what a carrying capacity in terms of number of people is or might be?
Are you talking about the carrying capacity in terms of social impacts or in terms of environmental impacts?
Environmental impacts. I mean, is there a figure? Does something like that exist, or is it undetermined at this point?
I'm not aware of one, but I believe that if there is, Pansy Knofziger of the Scenic Waterways Advisory Committee would be able to tell you that.
For the record, she's indicating that there is no.
I was pretty sure that was the case.
Level. I understand the case is that actually the situation has improved in the last few years, probably due to the attention and educational efforts that have been developed. If that hadn't been the case, if it had gone the other way, if things were continuing to deteriorate, would you then look differently on a limited entry possibility?
I'm not sure how to answer that question for two reasons. First, because they didn't. And second, because there's still a lot more that we could do if we devoted the voter pass money more with less diversions to other kinds of things, to exactly those kinds of environmental improvements, educational activities that the original voter pass legislation called for. Much of that money has been diverted to other purposes, and we have not seen the level of improvement over there that we think is possible.
One further question. What is there any kind of patrolling done? I mean, for example, the Rogue River has a regular Forest Service irregularly.
Yes, there is.
Essentially, they have a permit system that they often patrol for, but they also they do other maintenance in their regular trips.
Let me just indicate three things: that the BLM in the Rogue District has a special agent. The BLM in the Prineville District, which handles the in whose jurisdiction the Deschutes Falls, has just hired a special agent with law enforcement powers. In addition, the Oregon State Police have a cadet program over there that has really done a good job, and there are at least two representatives, Mr. Hyder, Mr. Lane, from the state police, who are here today, that would be in a position, I think, to probably respond more directly. In addition, there are sheriff jet boat patrols on the at least the lower river that I'm familiar with from the county sheriff's office.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a 15-minute break. Let me at this point close the work session on this bill. We will come back to it. When we do come back from the hearing and from the break, I do want to take testimony from the people out of town on Hospital 2906. We will still have time to take testimony from the others on this Deschutes bill, but we're going to try to accommodate people as best we can. We apologize for the time problem, but there's not much we can do about it. So we will we'll close the hearing for a moment on this issue and come back in 15 minutes.
Can I leave some testimony?
Yes.